Designed for Living Talk Radio Show on the Amazing Women of Power, the world's leading positive programming network, powered by Raven International, AWOPTalk247.com, where you can listen while you work. You are listening to this weekly Monday broadcast show at 10:30 Pacific Standard Time, aired again at 4:30 Pacific Standard Time, hosted by registered nurse, marriage and family therapist, master life coach, and author Michelle Downey. And I am your co-host, Bob Womack. Hello, Michelle.
Hi, Bob.
So today on our show for Women and Men of Power, we're going to talk about working through our toughest and hardest time. And there's a first aid toolkit we can use when things are at its darkest. And maybe learn how to expand and add a few things to our toolkit for our listeners. Am I right by saying this?
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
I think pretty much everybody, by the time that they're 40, and this is kind of the average age of our listeners, people come up against some kind of problem or circumstance in their life that they've figured out how to survive. I mean, you've had your heart broken a few times. You've been experienced betrayal. There's economic and emotional hard times. And, it's funny because one of the easiest things for me to do as a therapist and a healer is to dispense advice. It's very easy for me to suggest certain things for certain people to do, but it's entirely different when it's myself. You know, everybody thinks, that person knows how to do that. And the seduction of that is just because you know it, it does not mean you're applying it. So I always think about, like, you teach most what you need to learn. And I think that's the beauty of the work that I do, is we're all each other's students and teachers at different times. So one of the things I was thinking about is, they say, well, when the tough times come, tough people last, but tough times don't last. In other words, there's this too shall pass, even in the worst times. And also in retrospect, they say when you look back at your toughest times, when it was just the most blackest before the dawn, you know, that was just when the breakthrough was coming in. So this show is helping people through those times by sharing inspiration from others. For some people, it's like, you know, a health issue, like it just doesn't seem like there's any hope. And for others, the relationship they felt would last forever, it didn't. Maybe it was a job they felt really secure in or a line of work, and now it's changed. So each person has to develop a toolkit of survival. And the way I was taught was there's healthy toolkits and then there's the unhealthy toolkit. The unhealthy toolkits are, you know, typical things that people go to quickly because it numbs the pain, you know, quickly. But the problems always come back. And that would be like gambling or shopping or drugs, alcohol, cigarettes, pills, worrying about somebody else, eating, those kind of things. And obviously they temporarily help, but, you know, you're always ending up with the same problem. And sometimes these problems, these types of tools actually aggravate the problem. So one of the things I was doing in order to prepare for this show, I was reading a book, and I'm fascinated with older books. And this book was probably written in 1940, but chapters out of this book compilation was from 1920 and 1930. And it's interesting when you think about the fact that it doesn't matter what time frame it is. Universal principles are universal. The same things that apply back then apply now. There's certainly some things that are different. But I'll go over some of them, and then I'm going to ask you, you know, what kind of tools you use in your toolkit too, because I went through this book and I thought, okay, our listeners probably would enjoy hearing this, and but you know, you've obviously survived difficult times yourself, as have I. And it's during those times that they say our character is being built. So let me go on. One of the things that this particular book, it's called Putting Your Mind at Ease. And it was written actually in 1948, and it was a compilation of what was called then the Journal of Living. And what they did is they picked chapters from bestsellers that they had published in the past from other books. So one of the things that was the first thing that they put in this was, and of course this is always something that quickly comes up, is how do you define your higher power, the presence of God? And put quickly, you know, everything, especially when tough times happen, people, if they don't have a higher power or some concept of that, basically they're just going to be really miserable, anxious people. So if even a slight concept of a higher power is a necessity, that's one of the things that the psychiatrist, the psychologist William James found, that people who don't have some concept of a higher power, at least by the age of 40, you know, they basically are what we call neurotic. They're not doing very well. So in this particular book, there's one of them that said, it says, Freedom from Money Fears. And it was called, somebody by Basil King. And another one was 24 Hours to End Worry. And this was by Sir William Osler. And it's interesting because these are things we can apply today. Well, one of the first things they did is they talked about the higher power. And it said there was a French Catholic in the 18th century named Joseph Joubert. And he said, we can know God as long as we don't feel it necessary to define him. And I thought that was an interesting thought. I thought, okay, that's probably what everyone does, and that's why everybody gets into fights, because there's all these different ideas of this higher power. But he says, practice the habit of looking on every good thing as a sign of the higher power's activity. And if you practice looking at good things, it is focusing the presence of God here in this moment. And he went on to basically talk about water. He gave an example of water, and he said, to an infinite God, nothing is small, and could not lose sight of me, nor let me go. He said, when an object is immersed in water, it gives no extra trouble to the water to close around it. An object could be as small as a grain of dust or as big as a warship, but to the water, it's all the same. So he said, immersed in infinite mind, that was his way of higher power, closed round by it, it was not giving God any extra trouble to think of me, my work, my desire, and the objects with which I was living, since the nature of his being, he could do nothing else. And so I thought that was a nice analogy, because in my little mind, sometimes I have a hard time conceptualizing this higher power. Did any of that make sense, Bob?
Yeah, it makes sense to me. Carry on.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, carry on. These are my musings and my thoughts. So sometimes a little get out there, a little bit out there. So the other thing he says is to, it's love against fear. And basically that's what we're, in any given moment, that's the job in our mind, is to decide, are we going to look at it as love, are we going to look at it as fear? Because one of the things that I have found with most of my clients is that they conceptualize their higher power based on what kind of father they had. And, you know, if you think about it, you know, they talk about the heavenly father. So the only thing they can compare it to is what their own father was, consciously or unconsciously. And for myself, I was having a difficult time recently with this. And it occurred to me that my own father, although he had many good, redeeming, wonderful qualities, he was emotionally unavailable. He was very distant. He was extremely resentful. And towards the end of his life, there was a lot of things that occurred, including, you know, I was written out of his will. And so I realized inside of me, there's a piece of me that sees God in that same way. I have to do something right. I'm not always sure what it is, but I better do it right. And if I do it wrong, I'm always going to be judged or something's going to get me or I'm going to pay for it. And I can never know what he's angry at me for. And I realized that's exactly what I was doing. Oh, and the other thing was I would be gypped out of my inheritance no matter what it would happen to me. And I thought that's exactly the dilemma I'm in right now. It's like, isn't that ironic? And yet, when we look at, you know, what most people think of as a higher power, there's, you know, it even says it in the Bible, a sparrow can't fall without him knowing. The lilies of the field, are they not decked just beautifully, perfectly? The knowledge possessed by this infinite intelligence is so minute that the very hairs of our head are numbered. And so what I was doing was I was comparing things to my earthly father, not realizing that if I really acted as if it were true, I would be taken care of. And, of course, when people are in their dark moments, that's when, of course, the fear steps in and the distrust and the worry. And part of my issue, and I think a lot of people's issue, is they think they are the only one that is responsible for making things happen. And quite a while ago, I made a decision to turn that will and life of mine over to this higher power. But I always take it back. And so part of my dilemma has always been I can give him everything else, but there's certain things I can't give him, those things I can't give. And he's too busy to be responsible. But I also know in my own personal life, that's not true. That is absolutely not true. So what I saw in this book, it says you have to totally focus on that love in this moment, because that's all we have is this moment. Are we taken care of at this moment? And then he says, in this book, he says, my life, my work, myself, they're all a necessary part of his design as the thread the weaver weaves into the pattern in a carpet. So in other words, he sees us as part of this divine design, and we're no longer a free agent. In other words, I am his agent. I'm not free. So not only am I responsible to him or this higher power, but he is responsible for me. And there was something really comforting in that. It's like, no matter what I thought, there was something greater than me that was actually looking over me, watching, and actually creating conditions that I knew nothing about. And as I look back, and I think if everybody looks back with a particular eye, they realize things have happened that have saved them, that they could not have done themselves. It was completely... It's not within normal, the normal logic to say I was spared because I did this. No, I was spared because by chance somebody showed up at the right time to save my life. And of course, that's happened to me. So is that making any sense?
Yes, it's making sense. But is it possible you can summarize what you're saying?
Okay. So in summary, this higher power concept has to be at least tackled somewhere when people are dealing with hard times. The spiritual part is probably a very profound piece of it. There's other things that make things simple. And certainly keeping it simple is one of the first slogans I was ever taught. Keep it simple. And sometimes I can complicate things, as you could hear. I was going deep into my higher power experience and my walk. But I think that is a very necessary part. Everybody learns from other people maybe what'll work for them. But they say keep it simple, and easy does it. Another one of the simple things is live in day-tight compartments. And live in day-tight compartments, what this other one said, 24 hours to end worry, is we basically are on a, when he was looking at this big ship, in spite of the Titanic, he says, I urge you, you don't learn so to control the machinery as to live in day-tight compartments as the most certain way to ensure safety on the voyage. So basically, when you get on the bridge, you see that the bulkheads are in working order. He said, kind of symbolically, touch the button and hear at every level of your life the iron door shutting out the past, which are dead yesterdays, and then touch another and shut off with a metal curtain the future, the unborn tomorrows, and then you're safe for today. In other words, with the most important thing that these ships have is an ability to cut out the water and keep everything in working order and at safety, because they're able to shut off certain, the water. They're able to cut off different aspects of the water. So I thought that was a good analogy. Did that make sense?
Yeah, that makes pretty good sense, I would say. But tell me something else. What are some of the practical tools that we can use for our darkest or toughest times?
Okay. Well, one of the practical tools is stay in the moment. Stay in the moment. And that's the analogy they were trying to give by shut out the past, shut out the future, and live in day-tight compartments. In other words, keep that in the front of your mind. The other thing is, first things first. You just do what's right in front of you, what needs immediate attention. Small obstacles can seem like crises, and major problems can be overlooked, but when you're focusing on first things first, you're just doing what you have to do in front of you. And there's another one that's easy does it. We don't force solutions. Sometimes we're impatient for the answer. But if we're just, it's our thinking that makes things complicated. So even if we can't do anything, sometimes doing nothing is more productive. And there's another one that they say, just for today, just for today, just for today. You know, you can take small changes in your actions and attitude and explore new possibilities and take a few risks. But just for today, I will live through today only. And I like what the Al-Anon program has for one of their readings. It goes, just for today, I will try to live through this day only and not tackle all my problems at once. I can do something for hours that would appall me if I felt I had to keep it up for a lifetime. Just for today, I will be happy. this assumes to be true what Abraham Lincoln said, most folks are as happy as they make up their minds to be. Just for today, I will adjust myself to what is and not try to adjust everything to my own desires. I will take my luck as it comes and fit myself to it. Just for today, I will have a program. I will not follow it exactly, but I will have it. I will save myself from two pests, hurry and indecision. Just for today, I will be unafraid. Especially, I will not be afraid to enjoy what is beautiful and to believe that as I give to the world, so the world gives to me. And there's a couple other slogans that were really useful. One is, let it begin with me. In other words, when you want to bring peace to a situation, you start with yourself. How important is it? Is another one, and it helps gain perspective. That way we take time to think, is it really that important? Is the price that we're willing to pay to win an argument or to prove the other side that we're right, is that worth it? Does a person's unkind words in the morning merit a whole day of misery, obsession, and hostility? Or even 5 minutes of unhappiness, does it really matter? Do we need to take it personally? Here's another one that says, one day at a time. Again, just very simple, break things down. Keep an open mind. Words of wisdom can fall from the mouth of a small child or from ramblings of someone we dislike. We never know where we'll find inspiration or help. And there's teachers all around us. We just need to keep our minds open. There's another one called Live and Let Live, which is, you know, we don't have to be responsible for everybody. And get off people's backs. Let them be the way they are. Let them have the consequences of whatever they need to follow through on. We don't need to suffer as a result of other people's choices. And we need to take care of ourselves. And again, this is obvious, but we have to get enough sleep. We have to eat. And sometimes when we're in a stressed out situation, these are the first things that go. And our support system, we need people that are with us who remind us that what we're doing is worthy. Who we are matters. We merit our own respect. You know, we need and deserve to treat ourselves with dignity. And then let go and let God is another way of saying basically let go of the ego or the self-will trying to handle everything. And just let this higher power that we maybe can't name or understand, let it take care of the situation. When we feel we've run out of options and nothing is going the way we expected and we can't figure out what to do, then that's the time to let go and let God. You know, he's in charge of the results. We're going to let it go because we're not in charge. Even if we think we are, we're really not. And also gives us permission to relax, to not be so stressed, and let life happen. So those were some of the things. The other thing is, that they said is when you feel like at the worst and you're really struggling, you start thinking about other people. How can I be of service? What can I do for other people? So that was another. These are some of the things that I saw that were, you know, repetitious basically in all the books that I saw about how things were being dealt with and how people were dealing with their situations. Does that part make sense, too?
Yes, it does, Michelle, and you're saying it very well. And I'm hoping the audience is listening to what you're saying, because what you're giving advice, and it seemed like a thing that one should do, not stress over the little things, and sometimes things take care of themselves by taking care of one thing at a time.
Yeah, yeah, and one thing at a time. Even if it's you don't know that it's going to work or not, if you do just one thing at a time, it helps slow down the mind. Because I don't know about you, but my mind goes in a million different directions. And when I'm worried and I'm trying to control something, it fabricates fantasies of horrible situations. And then I get all stressed, and then it's like, oh, no, I've got to get back to the present. And that's when they talk about this mindfulness that people are talking about nowadays, the practice of mindfulness, being in this moment, practicing working on exactly what I am doing. If I'm doing the dishes, that's what I need to think about are the dishes and nothing else. And then the next thing, whatever that is, it's each simple step, just staying in this moment, doing this thing. It's amazing how calm people get. I know that in a lot of religions, people make it a mystical religious practice to simply do this. And whatever this is, offer this up. You know, I was raised by Catholics, so it's whatever is your work, whether you like it or dislike it, you offer it up. It's offered as an offering. And, you know, with the nuns, they used to say, you know, offer it up on behalf of somebody. So if you're praying for someone, then whatever work that you do that you dislike, you do it. But then you offer it up as it's something that I am doing and I'm thinking about somebody. And that's another way to get out of yourself, because thinking of yourself is, you know, all me, me, and me, and it's a very small package when you think about it. But when you start thinking about others, then the purpose for what you're here for kind of, you know, starts to, oh, yeah, that's right, I'm here for other people. I'm not just here for me. So anyway, I think we've got about just a few more minutes. Is there anything that you would like to add? I've kind of added all the things that I've been thinking about or writing about.
Michelle, I think you covered everything that we need to say, and as for me saying more to it, I cannot.
Okay. Well, hope you have a good day. I hope our listeners have a great day. And until next time, as you say,
live life and be well.
Okay.
Until then, let life be well and good.